Welcome to Facilitating the Mission, the podcast of Shepherd Staff Mission Facilitators. My name is Brian Mondock.
Hey, Brian, and I am Jeff Jackson.
Jeff, how you doing?
Well, I'm doing well. A lot happening, you know, around the world. A lot of thought-provoking incidents have taken place recently, and much of which you're aware of. And so, yeah, it's an interesting season right now.
Yeah, if you're talking about all the flap around the Chow missionary issue, just so interesting watching that unfold. A little infuriating when it first happened. I mean, everybody has an opinion, and it doesn't seem like, you know, at first there was a lot of people that wanted people to think about it. They just wanted them to instantly make up their mind about it. And so all the communication is super reactionary.
It is. And it's kind of one of those things that you see just the way, I think the way our country and our culture and technology, you know, the way it is today, it's like anybody's looking for anything to ignite an opportunity for them to share their convictions about something. And so like this incident triggered an opportunity for a lot of people to get out, you know, get off of their chest what's been there about Christians, about Christianity, about way, and even within the church. And it's just kind of sad. But the combination of that and then, you know, what's going on in Ukraine and, you know, working with some of the folks that we have there in contingency planning, if that goes sideways, you know, what the effect of that is, both on the Ukrainian people and certainly on the people we serve. Yeah, a lot of those kind of things going on.
Hey, Jeff, I'm not super in the loop with what's happening in the Ukraine. And people listening might not either. So,
well, basically, you know, this week, just a few days ago, you know, Russia has already captured Crimea, the Crimean Peninsula,
a couple of
years ago. And there's just a small inlet to this sea that's almost half of the Crimean Peninsula. And so I don't know how long ago, but Russia parked one of a super tanker to block it off so nobody but them had access to it. And so the Ukrainian Navy was kind of patrolling around over there, and they got in a conflict with the Russian Navy, and shots were fired, and basically, you know, a bunch of three Ukrainian ships were seized by the Russians, and 24 of their some Ukrainian Navy guys were seized, and so they're on, you know, they're getting on war footing now because of that, and the country just declared martial law. They're getting prepared for an invasion from the east, you know, kind of where Russia is already in control of Donetsk, one of their cities. And so, you know, we have people in the Ukraine. And so what we're trying to do is, you know, just be prepared if things do go sideways with, well, how do we respond? How do we keep an eye on our folks that are there? How do we help to keep their home churches aware of what's going on and with their situation over there? So interesting.
That is interesting. When the Russia and Crimea conflict happened, you know, what was Shepherd Staff's footing?
Well, we actually had people in Donetsk, the city that was basically occupied by Russia. And so they had to actually, you know, evacuate out of their city and have never been able to go back. And that triggered, you know, their ministry journey. Triggered them, actually ended up leaving the country for a while until now they're back and they're in a different city further away from the border, but having plans and ready, you know, so that through our network of other organizations that we work with, having a plan that if they needed to flee, they couldn't fly out and they had to drive out or take the trains, you know, having people in cities that were still safely within the confines of Ukraine. All that kind of stuff, you know, things that a lot of people don't think about when it comes to missions. And even, you know, this week, the blog post that I put up this week, you know, for our blog was about just the value of what we call a regular communication plan, where a church leader having, you know, setting up a regular communication plan with missionaries so that they check in every, you know, once a week or depending on their location, maybe every day. And if that doesn't happen, what that triggers. So how just, you know, using the technology to help keep tabs on missionaries, to help keep their home church and their family members informed So, yeah, that's the kind of world we live in. And I mean, it's always been that kind of world. It's not any different than it has been in the past. But the difference is we have this technology now that actually can alleviate a lot of the things that used to be the consequence of the world we live in.
Right, right. That was the role that I had at, you know, at the last church I worked at. When the Arab Spring was happening, we had three or four missionaries in Yemen that they were Shepherd Staff missionaries that I had to be in regular contact with, you know, while conflict and civil war was happening in their cities. And some, they were all in different cities, and some were, you know, some of the spots were hotter, but I was on the phone with one guy and you could hear machine gun going off and mortars going off in the background, and wasn't on his block, so he felt safe, if you can believe it. But that was, you know, having those contingencies in place are crucial. So anyway, I don't even think this is the topic for the day, but this is definitely something we'll have to revisit again.
Well, it kind of can dovetail into it because again, some of these folks that we serve over there are out of small churches.
Okay.
And again, believe it or not, well, I don't want to jump, but if I don't say it now, I might forget about it. But even the idea of a small church, when something like this happens, small churches are thinking about it. There's a level of connection with the bulk of the body that they're thinking about it more than a missionary out of a large church.
Right. The most, more of the church is thinking about it.
More of the church as a percentage, for sure.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And, you know, you had a few further thoughts on the Chow thing. I know we're going to discuss this a little later on, but, you know, a couple of quick thoughts on that.
Well, you know, the thing I was thinking is, again, I get so agitated, Jeff, like most people when they read everybody else's opinions in social media and about this. And, you know, I also have an opinion on which I'm an expert.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. But I've kind of refrained from saying anything because I really, really want to see the information come out. I've seen a couple of really thought-provoking posts where guys that are in a place where they can, you know, make some phone calls and make their daily tasks about finding out about this information have put out some really thought-provoking, helpful, informative, educational posts and articles about this whole situation. And so we'll put some links on to those articles in this podcast since we're talking about it, and maybe we'll have a follow-up blog post. But I'm just, you know, I'm so glad that information's coming out about this, that there's conversation about just God's plan for getting the word out about Jesus into the world. It's a very top shelf conversation. It's not a pleasant one all the time, but I think that we believers and those of us that really, really are Great Commission Christians need to know why we're doing what we're doing and have some thoughtful responses to it, not just some pat answers that we hear or read about in social media.
Yeah, and I think that, yeah, I'm kind of the same, of the same mind, and the whole idea of, you know, within the realm of the sovereignty of God, that this provokes, his permitting this to happen,
mm-hmm.
provokes a level of thinking and is can be really valuable if it's handled right. So,
yeah, that, you know, it's interesting because this isn't the first time this has happened, and you know, one of the things we've seen this compared to the Jim Elliot story, and we know that there's the tip of the spear or whatever that movie's called. What is that movie called?
The end of the spear.
End of the spear.
Yeah,
and so this has been, you know, for almost half a century, a conversation that's happened, that's been happening about missions and the way news was distributed when, you know, the Jim Elliot thing happened was, you know, very, very controlled, very, very, you know, how do I want to put the release of this information was, again, controlled. And, you know, you contrast that with the way information comes out, you know, half a century later, and it's very, very chaotic, and you really don't know what to think about it. No one wants to be told what to think about it.
Right.
But we need to have a worldview that's informed by the Bible.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, we can get into that later. But
I'm on a huge soapbox all of a sudden, but yeah. You started it.
I did. It's my fault. Yeah, so, you know, I think what we want to do is I'd like to further the discussion a little bit more about small churches and being involved in global missions. And, you know, we've covered it from a couple of different angles already. I mean, do you have any thoughts percolating from our last discussion on this subject before we plunge back in?
The one thing that I've enjoyed is my role here is in this podcast is going back and editing it and listening to it again. And I'm just so encouraged by, I know this might sound self-promoting, but I just really love the way, you know, Shepherd Staff is set up to equip any church, it's big or small. It has a scalable business model that helps anybody, any church, provide mission support for whatever missionary endeavor they want to pursue, a small church or big church.
Right.
And I just love that this model helps a small church be able to do the things they think God is calling them to do in the world of missions without, you know, having to do it with their own expression. That's the way Shepherd Staff has equipped them. So does that make sense?
It does. And that's why, you know, I think, you know, part of our fulfilling the role that God's given us to have in the kingdom, and it's been fun to be part of it. And again, working with churches from all sizes, I mean, churches of literally more than, you know, 20,000 down to churches with 40. I just love, you know, good taglines for businesses. And one of the ones that I love the most, and I, you know, if they hadn't taken it, if I'd ever thought of it myself, I would have seized it for us, but is Home Depot's, where, you know, their tagline is, "You can do it, we can help." And that really, to me, summarizes our, you know, our view. We're saying to a local church, any local church, regardless of their size, you should be involved in what God's doing around the world. You can be involved in what God is doing around the world, and we can help. But it's you doing the work and us helping you to see tools maybe that you didn't have, helping you to understand things that you didn't understand that will help you be in the role that God wants you to play. So it's exciting to me that God's permitted us to do that again from churches with alongside churches that go from, you know, small to humongous, and to basically, you know, because what we say and the way I've condensed it down when I'm talking to somebody that just can't think along the lines of a missions agency like us is we leave the home church in the driver's seat. You know,
right.
I was just having a conversation yesterday with somebody that's inquiring about our ministry, and, you know, and they were trying to wrap their minds around, well, how are you different than a traditional agency? And one of the points that I made was like, look, we don't have a vision to accomplish anything directly around the world. Most agencies have a vision that their role in the kingdom is to accomplish something directly on the mission field. And then they partner with churches and they partner with individuals to accomplish their vision. And we don't navigate in that realm. We don't have a vision to do anything directly on the field. Our vision is to help a local church fulfill its direction. I mean, its vision for direct impact on the world. And so our vision is to help them fulfill their vision. And we leave them in the driver's seat and then help them do that. They can do it. We can help.
There are certain elements to every story, every great story that's ever been told. And that is you have a hero, and you have a good guy, and you have a bad guy. You always got to have those two things. But the third thing that a good story has is a mentor. Captain Kirk has a Spock. Luke Skywalker has an Obi-Wan Kenobi. Whatever the good story is, there's always a mentor in it. And I think what Shepherd Staff does is it helps the hero be the hero by being the mentor. And I don't mean to overdramatize it, but I really think that, you know, when Jesus called us to be a servant, you know, being a good servant is promoting the welfare of others. And I think that's exactly what Shepherd Staff does.
You know, and that's what we try to do. I mean, obviously, we don't always accomplish that. And honestly, you know, sometimes it's very challenging with certain churches because there's so much more that they could be doing to send and to care for their own. And for whatever reason, they're caught up in just, you know, all the stuff a local church is caught up with. And, you know, they might need a new building. They need to expand the one they're in. They've had some a division among the leadership, whatever. Stuff happens. There's a layoff, you know, in the local manufacturing industry that a lot of their members work in those manufacturing plants. So what happens is a lot of times, you know, there are these churches that don't, that, you know, because of what's going on with them, they're not providing the kind of care that they can or that they should. And then that kind of thrusts us back into the role of what a lot of traditional agencies provide, where we're doing things for their missionaries that really they can and should be doing, but for a multitude of reasons, they're not. And so we're consciously trying to get to be that mentor role with them. But sometimes we're forced into sort of being the spearhead instead of the spear. And so, you know, along the lines of, you know, small churches being able to impact the globe and being called, I mean, that's crucial. We talked about that last time. Again, I think in both the last two, the theology of, look, God is the missionary God. And when the pastor of a small church gets God's heart for the nations and the role a local church is supposed to have, including his own, it changes them. And they can participate. They can do it. And again, we can help. But I was thinking about, you know, sometimes the the way people think, and I'm gonna kind of play on a couple of words here. I was thinking about it, you know, some people's mindset is small churches can be involved in what God's doing around the world despite their size. And that's one way to look at it. In other words, their size is an obstacle that can be overcome. But I don't think that's the right way to look at it. It's not that small churches can be have global impact despite their size. It's really better said, I think, small churches can have a global impact because of their size. In other words, it's the very nature of small churches and the dynamics that are taking place in a small church that actually make them, that's an asset rather than a deficit to be overcome.
So, what is it that you think small churches have that big churches don't have?
Well, you know, that's a great question. And we should kick that around a little bit. In fact, it'd be interesting to get other people's thoughts on that. You know, one guy that's actually approached this actually in a book about small churches, one of the best books that I've ever read on the whole idea of small church. It's a book called The Grasshopper Myth. And it's written by a guy named Carl Vaders, who actually has been pastoring a small church about 60 miles from where I live and had started a blog just for small church pastors many years ago. And when his book first came out and I read it, I was able to go up and, because again, a small church pastor, here you go, some Joe Schmo that he's never heard of or whatever, because he's the pastor of a small church, but he's got this book out. I just call him out of the blue, say, hey, I read your book. I'd love to get together. I'm only 60 miles away. I go up there. The guy spends 3 hours with me. You know, we had lunch together and we just kicked around for literally for almost 3 hours, dynamics in a small church. But in that book, which I think, you know, we can probably put a link to in the podcast.
Yep, we will.
He has a whole chapter on that he calls in chapter 7, Only in a Small Church. And he talks about some of the things, you know, and like one of the points he makes is like only in a small church does everyone have direct access to the pastor. And he goes on and he says, listen, you know, people, a large percentage of people, they want to have a personal relationship with the person who's leading them. And you only are capable of having a relationship with the person that's leading you if you're in a small church. You have access to the pastor. The pastor knows you personally. The pastor, you know him. There are facets of his life that you are aware of that in a larger church, you just by nature of the way things are, you get a larger church, you know, the time that you can actually spend getting to know the pastor is limited. So, you know, I think to me, the churches, small churches that I pastored, and then versus the one mega church that I was on staff with, where literally there's hoops you have to jump through to get a meeting with the pastor. And even if you try to talk to him after the service, there's a line of people. And then sometimes, you know, and I've seen this where, you know, in a large church and a mega church where you can only, you know, it's like people are watching and you get 1 minute talking to the pastor and then somebody moves you on because there's like a dozen people in line waiting to talk to him. It's almost like you're a celebrity and you're, you know, kind of you're waiting to talk to a celebrity and just say hi and maybe get a picture with him or get him to sign your, you know, his book that you bought. And so I don't know.
Yeah, it's such a weird thing. And, you know, I've worked at a couple of churches. I'm trying to think, have I only worked at a couple? And I think it is only a couple. And then consulted with a number of them. But the two where I was drawing a paycheck, one was just very massive church. And then one was trying to become a mega church. You know? And that's actually a worse situation is where, but the thing is that, you know, you talk about wanting to have, you know, a friend, you know, be the pastor's friend, that in those bigger churches was that attitude, or I mean, it was treated like an attitude, and then it was heavily criticized,
right?
Because, you know, they just don't understand the relationship with Jesus or whatever, and there's truth to that, but
yes.
that can go two ways.
yeah, and really, one of the points that Carl makes in the book, and what I love about his book, and what I love about him as a person, is he doesn't bag on mega churches.
Uh-huh.
He's very balanced in his view and recognizes this is not an either or thing.
Right.
God is a big God and he works in a variety of ways, and big churches have their purposes in his thing. The mm-hmm. problem for us is, which he points out, and I think anybody who loves small churches points out, is that, you know, the big churches get all the notoriety. They're the speaker conference speakers. And again, that's sort of the expression of our culture, where success is measured in numbers. That's the primary ingredient of success. And so, but one of the points that he makes is just what you were just talking about, is the idea, and all of this is related to missions, you know, again, because you care about your friends. So when you're a friend of the guy who's in the pulpit every week and you go to the mission field, you're at that level of relationship with him, he's going to care about you. And he's going to talk about you, and he's going to want to pass on what's going on with you to others and pray for you and lead others to pray for you. And so, you know, so he makes this point that, you know, basically in small churches, the pastor's friends are the members. In big churches, the pastor's friends are other big church pastors. And most of the relationships they have with people in the church are subordinates. So their relationship isn't just it's more than just a friendship thing. It's like from a boss to an employee kind of dynamic, which there's a friendship component to that. But ultimately, you know, the business in sometimes trumps the relationship friend angle.
Yeah. It's more of a doctor-patient kind of dynamic rather than, you know, a friend-to-friend dynamic.
Yeah, it is. And so I think that, you know, and one of the interesting things where he doesn't say this in his book, but I've always been, you know, he kind of crystallized some thoughts for me on it. And even with some of the big mega churches that we work with, where their, you know, their care for their missionaries comes from their home groups, their small groups. So, you know, a missionary is assigned or adopted by one small group, or say three small groups, if there's 100, some of the churches have hundreds of small groups. And just the idea that these mega churches all put such a great value on small groups, and the idea that, hey, your spiritual and emotional health really is going to progress if you're in a small group community, which always to me provokes the thought, well, if the church really moves forward on small groups, then what's the point of the big meeting together that has to be orchestrated, produced, done within a certain time frame? If the bread and butter and where the growth is found in small groups, then, you know, and again, there's probably answers for that. I've heard a lot of them, but that's just always as so. Even the mega churches recognize the value of relationships for missionary care and success. And so, yeah.
The thing though, that I would, having worked in, you know, on staff at a mega church, they had a missions ministry that was dynamic, and they also had a small groups ministry that was dynamic, but there wasn't a cohesiveness between the two because there wasn't from the top.
Yes.
From the top is like, I want your ministry to be successful, but there wasn't a cohesiveness where the ministries are there to serve each other. They were all there to they were all their own little franchises, basically the way it worked.
Yeah.
And so even in that situation where they value small groups in order to care for missionaries, that really has to come from the top, where there's, you know, each one of our ministries is here for the other ministry.
Right.
And that isn't always communicated from the top.
Well, and that's where it gets back into even, you know, I had written a blog post on this a while back, the idea of, you know, if in a lot of churches, missions is one slice of the ministry pie.
Right.
And in that kind of mindset, that's exactly what you're talking about, where the home is a small group ministry is kind of a standalone thing. And then the missions ministry is a standalone thing. And the links between the two are really not developed.
Right.
Versus the mindset where, you know, missions isn't a slice of the pie, it's the pie pan that the whole ministry pie sits in.
Right.
And so when that happens, then the home fellowships are seen, not only are they about, you know, helping the people who are members of the home fellowship nurture and grow and mature, but there's this recognition that if you do nurture, grow, mature, God may call you to become a missionary like other people in our church, and we're going to care for those that he calls to go. And then, infusing that into the children's ministry, infusing that into the men's ministry, into the women's ministry, where there's this, we're part of this bigger thing that God's doing, and it's in the fabric of our church. It's part of our DNA. We have a role to play. Yeah, we're here to help people know and grow in the Lord. But if you know and grow in the Lord, you're going to care about what he's doing around the world and unreached people groups that are still waiting to hear.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. To learn more about becoming a missionary with Shepherd Staff, go to ssmfi.org/join. Connect with us on Facebook or Twitter by searching @ShepStaff on either platform.